The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 954. It's the 22nd of December 2017. On the podcast today, I have Bert Monroe, Head of Business Development at Hummingbird Resources, as HUM ticker, and Bert describes their first gold pour at their Marley mine. Also on the podcast, Tim Crane, Non-Executive Director of Seeing Machines, that's SEE, and also Tim is General Manager of Caterpillar Services, and Tim talks about his side of the business there at Seeing Machines. Plus, I have Patrick Cullen, CEO of Connemara Mining, CON, and Patrick describes their ongoing progress at their zinc and gold assets in Ireland. Also on the podcast, Merlin Marr Johnson, CEO of Eris Resources, that's ERIS ticker, and Eris floated yesterday, and Merlin talks about the company's zinc assets in Ireland and gold assets in Sweden. Plus, as always, I know I've been away for a while, but I've got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 3 or 4 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Bert Monroe, Head of Business Development at Hummingbird Resources. That's HUM ticker. Bert, thanks for joining me.
Not at all, Justin. Good to chat.
Yeah, very significant bit of news, which is quite exciting for you at Hummingbird. And we'll get to that bit of news in a bit. Just hold
really?
Off. I know you're excited, but hold off for a second. But for people say new to the podcast or have not heard of Hummingbird Resources, first of all, explain what you're all about, Bert.
Well, Hummingbird is now Africa's newest gold-producing company. We're an AIM-listed company, been listed for over 7 years on AIM, but we have just poured first gold at our Yanfolila gold mine in Mali. It's a high-grade, open-pit gold mining operation, which will be generating significant amounts of free cash flow in the coming years. And we are extremely excited about the next years ahead, yeah.
Mm. You just said it then, didn't you? You just said the news.
Yeah, happy, Justin.
I know.
What else was I going to say, Justin?
I know, exactly. So today, so take us through that. What actually happens when this? Take us through the first gold pour. What is it, for people who are not aware of, you know, mining and all that? So what does that actually mean, Bert?
Well, obviously, it's been what we've been driving towards for the last 10 years of our life. So it's been an absolutely phenomenal achievement. I think, we started construction 17 months ago, and we've now delivered first gold on time, on budget, which has been an amazing achievement. But obviously, literally, you know, in the gold room, seeing the gold getting poured, something you'll never forget. It's, an amazing sight after all this work and effort gone on to get here.
And where does that gold go on to now then? What was happening with that?
Well, it will get sold. We have a contract set up with a refiner, and obviously they buy it off us and it will get sold to them. But also, as you probably saw and we talked about a couple of weeks ago now, we've also launched the 1 ounce Hummingbird coin. So obviously, you know, some of it we will be bringing back to, you know, the Betts Metals. The Tibet's metals, and we'll be refining our own gold coins, which you'll be able to buy in the new year. So, but the majority at the moment will be sold to a refiner directly.
Okay, and this gold production, so what will you be sort of producing? We'll go through the economics again for people not aware of it, because how much will you be producing, you know, in the next few months and this year, hopefully?
Yeah, so the next 3 months is essentially a ramp-up period to commercial production. Mm-hmm. So by the end of Q1, we should be hitting commercial production. Our forecast for the first year of production is around 130,000 ounces of gold. And our life of mine, all-in cost of production, is around the $700 mark, all based on our feasibility study. So at the moment, obviously, you're getting, you know, give or take 550 to 600 an ounce margin on 130,000 ounces in the first year. The life of mine average production is about 110,000 ounces a year, but we've got a number of opportunities, we believe, to both increase the mine production levels, and also extend it as well. So our hope is that we'll be able to increase that 110,000 ounce number to something higher by bringing in higher grade pits earlier, which aren't currently in our mine plan. So as I said at the outset, it's a high grade mine. It's got over 3 grams a ton reserve grade, and it's open pit, so keeps your cost low.
Yeah, and for people trying to do the maths right there, even at, say, clearing $550 per ounce and 100,000, say, a year, ounces a year, that's $55 million there.
That's 100,000 ounces, yeah. So the first year, obviously, there's another 30,000 ounces of production. So, yeah, it's an extremely profitable operation. You know, at the moment, we're still trading at around 2x next year's free cash flow, so extremely cheap. On a free cash flow basis, I think the industry average is somewhere between sort of 5 to 10 times free cash flow, depending on, you know, geographic location and a number of operations and such like. But we are sort of at the bottom of our peer group, because ultimately we are, you know, the newest producer. So we've always been priced as a developer, and hopefully as we educate the market and get the story out there that we are now producing, and as we ramp up to commercial production, we'll gradually re-rate to our new peer group.
Yeah, and like you said, you've got other, you know, opportunities there as well, haven't you, which is not to be overlooked.
Yeah, I think that's almost what, hard to believe me saying it, but it's probably what the guys on site are as excited about. It's the fact that we brought this mine to production as quickly and as cheaply as possible, and we did that at the sacrifice of not fully developing all of the resources. Mm-hmm. So we've got in excess of 1 million ounces of gold outside of our reserves, which obviously we will be looking to start infill drilling this year and bring into our mine plan. So, you know, we firmly believe we can significantly extend the mine life and also hopefully increase the number of ounces we're producing on a year-by-year basis as well. So for us, the headline numbers, whilst extremely good and obviously show a very highly profitable mine, we believe we can improve by improve.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I know you know, gold is hovering around between sort of $1,250 and $1,300 per ounce. But like I said to you, do you know what? I've heard recently, apparently, people are using Bitcoin as a safe haven, which I think is just insane. And
I know, if you forget your password, you've lost it. I mean, that sounds like a bit of a nightmare. It sounds like a bit of a nightmare to me.
Yeah, but I just think, you know, the rally it's seen of late, it literally, I mean, going back last week, it rallied sort of like $3,000 in 24 hours, and that was like 40%, you know, and yet this is, you know, over $15,000 it went past, and this was when, you know, 12 months back, it was below $1,000. So it's gone from $1,000 to $15,000 in 12 months, and it's gone nuts. So I just think, if that's the case, if people are hedging, using Bitcoin as a safe haven, once this bubble, and it is a bubble in Bitcoin, once that sort of bursts, I think gold will fly, you know? So it'll be interesting to see. It's a good play here. But always have a bit of gold in your portfolio. I've had many an experienced investor who've earned much more than I'll ever earn in 10 of my lifetimes. But to say that, always have a bit of gold in your portfolio. But Bert, if anyone needs any convincing to, you know, they're not following the story, but they like the sound of this first gold pour, and they're not following your story right now, give them 3 reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Well, reason number one, we are Africa's newest gold producer, but we are still priced ultimately like a development company at trading around 2x free cash flow. Reason number two, whilst our existing mine plan is extremely good, we believe we've got, you know, well over 1 million ounces of discovered resources, which we can use to increase our current mine plan, which shows great development and growth potential in the future. And the third reason is really the exploration potential. We've got, you know, around 5,000 square kilometers of ground that we've got exploration rights over, and the ability to make new large discoveries is very much there. So for us, it's an exciting production story, but there's still very much a growth and exploration story as well coming through behind it. So those would be my 3 reasons to hit the follow button.
Marvellous. Thanks very much, Bert. You know, congratulations on this date, and like I say, you've got a lot to come yet, so no doubt we'll chat in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Perfect. Cheers. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tim Crane, Non-Executive Director of Seeing Machines, that's SEE ticker, and General Manager of Caterpillar Services. Tim, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Now, we've had a couple of guys from Seeing Machines, so it's nice to get your perspective on the company. And for people listening right now, and we've got quite a few questions to get through, but for people listening right now who are not familiar with the business of Seeing Machines, give us a brief summary, if you could, Tim.
Sure. Seeing Machines is a leader in computer vision technologies and solutions that enable machines to really see, understand, and assist people. Our technology improves safety in a number of different machine applications. Our technology is focused on the operator, and some of our primary but not exclusive use cases for that technology are fatigue and distraction. We are here and really headed to a place where we're going to truly understand operator state. You know, a person inside of a machine, an airplane, or a car, you know, is he or she alert? Are they conscious? Are they paying attention? Are they distracted? Are they intoxicated? You know, do they see an approaching risk into their environment? Seeing machines helps machines understand the condition of the operator and determine if he or she should be in control of a machine or if they really require assistance.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, like I mentioned, we've heard from a couple of people from Seeing Machines before. We've had Paul Angelatos from Fleet, Nick DiFiore talking about automotive, and Pat Nolan on aviation. So tell us about how you fit into the Seeing Machines story, and what is your role there, Tim?
Well, you know, it's probably best to go back to 2011 when I sold my safety business to Caterpillar. And at that time, you know, I had a small team focused on working with employees in all industries to help, you know, to assist those companies in the development of safety management systems that generate frontline involvement, leading to high levels of employee engagement and personal accountability. You know, and upon coming to Caterpillar, I was approached by a gentleman by the name of Dr. David Edwards, who worked for Caterpillar and had been studying the effects of fatigue and distraction on operators, you know, of machines. And he believed that if we combine technology like Seeing Machines' driver safety system with the consulting business that I sold Caterpillar, we'd have an extremely compelling value proposition to Caterpillar customers. So after months of hard work, David and I were really able to make this a reality. We hired two of the world's premier industrial sleep experts, and then we did a deal where we exclusively licensed Seeing Machines' DSS technology and launched a services business inside of Caterpillar. You know, this business today for Cat has about 2,000 large mining trucks that are monitored in a fleet center in Peoria, Illinois, 24/7, 365. And the business has continued to expand. And today we take safety technologies that provide real-time visibility to risk, like the DSS, and connect those technologies with change management and consulting services to deliver significant risk reduction and fatality reduction to our customers. You know, as our relationship with Seeing Machines has continued to progress, we've been able to negotiate a board seat, which today I occupy on behalf of Caterpillar. So because of our success in that fatigue and safety business inside of Caterpillar, my job role has expanded. I now lead both Caterpillar Mining Services, which is focused on providing mining customers with productivity, safety, and machine availability improvements through sensors like Seeing Machine sensors, but we also take that, combine it with analytics, change management, consulting services, you know, to really impact and meet our customers at you know, at their point of risk, which is really at the work phase. So I run that business for Cat and sit on the board of Seeing Machines.
I understand. And so it's largely about the off-road business. So let's talk about that, the off-road business. And I understand this was the first transport sector that Seeing Machines really sort of focused on. And Seeing Machines and Caterpillar sort of entered into a global license agreement in 2015. And Caterpillar took over responsibility for manufacturing, marketing and sales of the driver safety system off-road products. So what's happening in that space? And I mean, how do you sell that sort of DSS that you mentioned? And how many vehicles, you know, have DSS globally? How big is the market there? And have things sort of picked up since the resource industry has recovered of late?
Well, those are great questions. And let's see if I can, you know, answer each of them. You know, yes, there was a partnership between Freeport and Seeing Machines that really kicked off, Freeport being a large mining customer, which really kicked off the fatigue and distraction product business for Seeing Machines. And it was Seeing Machines' sale to Freeport globally, all of their sites, all of their trucks, that really caught Caterpillar's attention. And it was the adoption of that system in that company that caused us to realize that the technology was really ready for rapid commercialization. So it was in 2016, you know, late 2015, early 2016, that Caterpillar decided that with our hardware development, hardening capabilities, combined with our global distribution network, that we were in a strong position to take the lead with the product in our markets. So you're right. Today we design, we manufacture, and we sell the DSS in both on-highway and off-highway applications that are inside of Caterpillar's markets. And these are primarily what we at Cat would call, you know, energy, which would be oil and gas applications, marine applications, mining, which we've been discussing, and construction industries as well, which would include things like forestry that maybe, you know, some people wouldn't really connect with construction. So today, that business, the sale of the DSS, the monitoring of those systems in the cabs of our machine is rapidly growing. I think we're achieving over 75% year-over-year growth in that part of our business. I think it's one of those most important parts of Caterpillar's business, which I hinted at earlier, is that we sell the DSS as part of a service. We typically start by using the DSS, the driver safety system, along with other sensors and technologies to quantify a company's fatigue and distraction risk and fatigue and distraction's impact on productivity and machine health. You know, if a person is distracted or fatigued, it has an impact on the way that they operate those machines. And if it's a large mining truck, you know, carrying hundreds of thousands of, you know, tons inside of a truck, it can have a huge impact on their profitability. So we can correlate the risk that operator in the cab has, you know, to the loss of productivity, to machines availability and maintenance, and also to safety. And so we're able to quantify risk that nobody's ever been able to quantify before. I think we currently monitor just under 2,000 machines, which are mostly mining assets. And, you know, Cat has over 2 million connected assets. So it's our goal really to have tens of thousands of pieces of mining equipment with this technology, and to connect hundreds of thousands of what we consider, you know, construction and marine assets with the DSS and its associated service. So I guess I think your last question was about market conditions, right? And its impact on the business. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we found, you know, over the past 17 years of selling a safety product, you know, like the DSS in growing cases, regulated safety products, it's often a bit recession proof. So safety products like this don't really slow down in correlation to market conditions, at least not at the same rate. So in comparison to, you know, large machine sales at Caterpillar, you know, we have continued to experience double-digit safety revenue growth over the past 7 years. You know, however, the improvement in the mining markets has certainly led to growth in our overall sales pipeline that really seems to indicate double-digit year-over-year growth for the DSS and other technologies, you know, that will continue. So, you know, it's a bit of a different beast being a safety technology or a critical safety system for our customers.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that you did touch on it there, but like I said, it's got a huge use in mining. But in the agreement there, you talk about fields of use, this DSS technology. So, you know, apart from mining, you know, just describe other areas this is applicable to, if you could, Tim.
Yeah, well, seeing machines their technology for Caterpillar is kind of just at its infancy. And so while we have thousands of, you know, large mining trucks, we also have significant demands from companies in oil and gas, inside of light vehicles, inside of bus fleets where they transport people to and from a site. You know, we have people that are operating service trucks around the world where they go out and service a wellhead, and they're putting this technology into those trucks. So, you know, we've moved well beyond just mining, although mining has been kind of our early adoption. And we're really going to a place where mining machines, construction machines, but also machines that we would be placing out in applications in oil and gas or marine, you know, are going to be first fit coming off of the line, you know, off the production line. They'll have DSS installed in it. Mm-hmm. And so we expect to move beyond, you know, fatigue and distraction. And as we move beyond just fatigue and distraction into really more understanding the operator state, it's in that place that we'll be able to intervene. And so we've got applications like pipeline control rooms where we have customers pulling on us to implement the technology in, you know, pipeline control rooms. We also have control rooms where we control multiple machines from one location. Yeah. You know, we have actually a command center where you can log in and control multiple dozers or multiple trucks all from one location around the world. And that creates even greater levels of risk. So it's in those applications that we'll see a console-based version of the product. And I think that parallels with Sea Machines Aviation use cases, which you already heard from Pat, you know, earlier. Beyond that, I think that for us, that anywhere where you see a forward-facing operator. So recently, we just had the incident, you know, in the United States with Amtrak, where the Amtrak train derailed and, mm-hmm. Some people were unfortunately killed. And, you know, it's applications like that. EMD is a Caterpillar company, the rail company that Sea Machines is partnered with, as is Progress Rail. And I think it's those types of use cases where you're going to see the DSS or like technology based on the algorithms that Sea Machines produces really have a significant impact. And hopefully we'll be able to prevent those types of things in the future. And I think those are the types of applications beyond just the mining application where you're going to see us really put the DSS and its associated algorithms to work.
Okay. All right. So stepping back, generally looking at Sea Machines, you know, in its entirety, what's can we expect? What's currently happening? What's news coming up, Tim?
Well, as you're probably aware, you know, Sea Machines just completed a major capital raise, mm-hmm. you know, which will allow us to respond to significant demand in automotive fleet, rail, and aviation markets. It's also going to help us up our R&D to really press into this issue of operator state. You know, what is the state of being? So we're in the state of, you know, and in the process of continuously improving our products and ensuring our installed, you know, the installed base of people that are actually actively using the product around the world, you know, receive the highest level of value from us. So it's with machine learning and AI at the core of our approach that we're shaping the future of a machine's ability to understand the human inside the environment in which that machine operates. Mm-hmm. This funding, you know, will have, and with a large number of major household brands like Caterpillar and EMD and other brands you'd recognize in automotive fleet and aviation, you know, we're poised for significant growth. And I think that's, you know, that's what you should expect from Sea Machines.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, if someone's listening right now, Tim, and like the sound of what you're talking about and the way you're headed with Sea Machines, but are not yet following you, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Sure. Well, like I said, Sea Machines just completed a very, you know, successful capital raise on AIM. This means we're going to meet the growing demand across all of our transport sectors. So I think that's exciting. That's reason one. Two, Sea Machines technology is highly relevant to most of the world's major ongoing discussions. I mean, if you follow conversations about disruptive technologies and technological trends, the automation of vehicles, the growth of IoT sensors and machine learning, the dawn of artificial intelligence puts Sea Machines right in the middle of a technological revolution that often only comes, you know, from my perspective, once in a lifetime. And Sea Machines technology will be core to the autonomous vehicle production and to the disruption that's likely to come in aviation, rail, mining, and off-road industries. So our technology will be a key safety enabler in machine operation going forward. I think that's two. Mm-hmm. And three, you know, in my current job, working with mining companies at Caterpillar that are using analytics and digital information to transform the way they operate, I get to see what customers want. I can see where our technology fits. And Sea Machines will connect that human element with the machine to assist customers to maximize productivity, safety, and in our business, machine uptime and availability in ways that we never thought possible. And so the momentum is building for all parts of the business, fleet, rail, aviation, you know, construction, and you're hearing about our business and brands that we're working with, like Emirates, you know, Caterpillar, and others in the automotive space. So the demand for these technologies that are and what we do will prevent events like the recent train derailment. So it's going to continue to grow, And I think it's an incredibly exciting space and a leading indicator for many other markets. So that's another reason I'd be following C.
Excellent. Tim, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Patrick Cullen, CEO of Connemara Mining, that's C-O-N ticker. Patrick, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, well, it's good to get you on, because you know, there's interest in the stock. I've seen you mentioned on social media quite a bit and on Vox, and so it is nice to get you on finally. But for people not aware of Connemara Mining, Patrick, give them a brief overview of what you're all about, please.
Yeah, so Connemara is an exploration company, junior exploration company, and we're focused on Irish projects, and we have assets in gold and in zinc, all in the Republic of Ireland. We've been getting very active over the past 4 months. Myself, I joined 4 months ago, and in that time, we've been drilling on two separate gold projects, and we've seen some advances on our zinc interests as well. Yeah.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's go back to some recent news you've released. So you've recently done an update on the gold drilling field and field exploration. Take us through some of that detail, if you could, Patrick.
Yeah, well, in August, when we kind of restarted on these gold projects, we kind of announced a plan. We got busy in Donegal. We have a project at Inishowen in the northwest of Ireland, and then a second project in Wicklow and Wexford in the southeast. That's the project that we've been drilling on at the moment. In fact, we just pulled the rig 2 days ago, and the samples that have been taken from the drilling are being shipped today to the labs in Loughrea in Ireland. So we're actually going to get results out, some drilling results, probably second week in January. Mm-hmm. We set out a small program there of about 500 meters, three or four holes. We drilled three holes. Christmas is upon us now, and so we've decided to stop there for the moment. But we're pretty pleased. We've also done quite a lot of field work in the area around there to extend our targets. The key thing with this this project in Wicklow, Wexford, we've managed to put together about 15 kilometer trend of known gold occurrences. That's from soil sampling and from historic drilling, and we have geophysics, airborne geophysics, which shows us a very clear trend. So that's what's happening there in Wicklow, Wexford.
Yeah, and so you say you've been there sort of 4 months now. So where have you come from to be where you are today then, Patrick?
Yeah, so my own experience, I'm Irish, as you can tell. I've graduated from Cork University here in Ireland, and joined Schlumberger early in my career. That's on the oilfield services side. Mm-hmm. We did some work for Anglo-American Gold Division, as it was, on 3D seismics and the geophysics. And so I headed off to South Africa. Turned out to be quite a long stay, some 20 years, where I was involved with some of the majors there, Anglo Gold, Placer Dome that was taken out by Barrick in the end, and some exploration with Anglo Platinum. And then up in Africa, African Energy Resources, Montero Resources, phosphates, coal, gold, platinum, quite a range of activity. Mm-hmm. Back in Ireland, and picked up this challenge with the Connemara and John Teeling, who's the chairman, a very experienced group of people with some really good assets. And I saw some real potential that if we could get it going, which we're doing now, we could really add some shareholder value. And I think that's been reflected in our share price over the past 4 months.
Yeah. So what's it like? I mean, you mentioned there's some big players there. And what's it like from coming from a big player to, a junior resource company?
No, I've been in the junior resources business since 2005.
Yeah.
So I've been involved in some Australian listing, Toronto listings. I've been involved in some companies that went on to be listed in, juniors that went on to be listed in London. So, I've been in that space long enough. But I do have that sort of major experience going back, and some solid mining experience, I must add. So, I know my way around mining. I've spent time underground.
Do you have, when you come to when you start with a company like Connemara and you look through the assets and see what they have and see what's going on there, do you have sort of a game plan, a 5-year plan or anything like that, or do you have an ambition?
Yeah, certainly. Like, I mean, my you know, I think one of the things that attracted me to Connemara was the low share price at the time. And when I came in, it was at 1.75. I think we're trading at about 4.3 pence at the moment. And we've been up over five in about a month ago. But yeah, what attracts me is you can see those, you know, we're in zinc space in Ireland. We've got three good zinc projects. We've got two joint ventures, one with Teck, who's a major. And we're expecting, you know, they've earned into one of our projects 75%, and we expect some news in the new year as to what their plans are going forward. So quite excited about that. That's at Oldcastle. It's west of the producing Tara mine, which is Europe's largest zinc mine. Mm-hmm. We've also got a joint venture with Group 11 that's at Stone Park. They've just listed in Canada. They've got about $1 million Canadian earmarked for that Stone Park project. And that happens to be adjacent to the Glencore project, which is a 42 million ton, 8% lead zinc deposit in Limerick, in the west of Ireland. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're looking at those and you're seeing the zinc price, which I've seen, you know, over the past year, that it's, you know, it's really gone up in leaps and bounds and looks very solid going forward. So that was of interest to me. And of course, then gold assets are always good. And for a junior, We've got two gold projects which are accessible to us. You know, the expenditures that we can spend £200,000 or £300,000 and achieve a lot and really move these projects forward. So that was the opportunity I saw, and I'm not the only one that saw those opportunities. I mean, we've got some major shareholders that have taken large positions in the same time period because they saw that the company was undervalued.
Yeah, well, Paul Johnson's a big holder. I've had Paul on the podcast several times when he was with Metal Tiger. So I know he knows his stuff, so he must see something of interest here. So that's very interesting. So
That's right. And in fact, okay, he's out of Metal Tiger now directly, but I mean, Metal Tiger is still an option holder. Connemara sits with, we have £400,000 in warrants out of 3.4 pence. We've got another £1 million in warrants out at 5 pence. So, you know, we're really bullish and we're positive about the work we're doing. We're hoping to see good gold results out of the Wicklow Wexford drilling, and to extend that trend. You know, to confirm that 15-kilometer trend and really start to pick up on where the key areas where we should be targeting going forward. So. You know, in terms of next year and going forward, I mean, we'd really like to see the share price moving and accessing some of the cash from those warrants and really building on what, you know, on the success we've had.
Excellent stuff. Well, Patrick, if someone's listening right now and likes the sound of Connemara Mining, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them three quick reasons why they should add you to their watch list.
Well, you should be following us on the watch list because we're in zinc. We've got good zinc assets where we expect activity in 2018, and Ireland is an excellent zinc jurisdiction, and not only an excellent jurisdiction geologically, but politically and fiscally. So a lot of exploration activity in Ireland, but Connemara is a good one to follow there. And of course, we have the exposure to gold. We're developing gold projects, which we hope to bring to the attention of maybe more senior partners or very focused funds that will invest in these projects as we go forward. You know, we have a lot of news coming out in the new year. So follow us and follow our progress on the gold. Results will be out in the middle of January, first or second week in January. And activity on the zinc.
Excellent stuff, Patrick. Good to chat to you. And like I said, you've got a lot of news coming out in the new year, so hopefully we'll chat again then. And have a happy Christmas and a merry new year.
Yeah, thanks very much, Justin. Great to talk to you. Look forward to speaking to you in the new year.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Merlin Marr Johnson, CEO of Eris Resources. That's E-R-I-S. Merlin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Good to be here.
I've never, ever talked to anyone before called Merlin, so it's a first for me. And it's, as I said, it's a first for you because you listed yesterday on the stock market there, but that's an unusual name, and it might just get you into some interesting conversations.
It is. It's done me well. I'm very glad for my parents to have given it to me, yeah.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, I assume there's lots of people listening right now who've not heard of Eris, because like I said, you did list yesterday, so you're brand new to the market there. So explain or summarise, if you could, Merlin, what are you all about, Eris?
Sure. Eris Resources, we came onto the market yesterday. We raised £4 million on admission. We are exploring for zinc in Ireland, and we've got a portfolio and of gold projects in Sweden. The company's been private for 4 years. It picked up the assets in the downturn when no one was looking at assets, and we really could pick the best areas possible. So we collected a lot of ground, did a lot of work on those projects, and when the company was ready to go into kind of multiple drill programs, we felt that it was mature enough to come onto the market.
Yeah.
So the zinc project is up in the northwest of Ireland, near the town of Sligo. It's shallow, it's high grade. It hasn't been explored for 30 years. There's an old lead zinc mine there, and we're exploring around that and out to the west. We've got a kind of a district scale play with lots of signs of mineralization, and we'll be drilling that from Q1 next year.
Excellent. And so you've got obviously zinc there in Ireland and gold in Sweden. So is there a focus here? Which is the focus? Are they both running together here?
They are running in parallel. Mm-hmm. What I haven't mentioned is that we've got two very, very strong partners with mid-tier Canadian companies. And perhaps this is a differentiator between Eris and other smaller exploration companies on AIM, is that we've got serious backing from industry, which is really an endorsement of our team and our strategy. Mm-hmm. One of the companies is called Osisko Gold Royalties, which is a $2.5 billion Canadian royalties company. And they cornerstoned our investment, our capital raise. They've got a 1% royalty over Ireland and over Sweden, and they wanted to support the company as it developed. At the project level and in Sweden, we've got a relationship with or a strategic alliance with Centerra Gold, and they are a $2 billion Canadian gold and copper mining company, and they are funding our entire Swedish portfolio. So we are running in parallel. We've got a team of geologists working and preparing for drill programs in Sweden, and a team of geologists ready and about to start in Ireland. But Eris Resources funds Ireland.
Yeah, so that's very interesting here, because it's always interesting. I'm an investor myself, and I always, when I'm looking at companies, always, you know, hookups with bigger companies are always very interesting, because you see, you realize they've done their due diligence, so they must know something. But so how did these come about, these relationships?
A lot of it comes down to the team and the founding directors of Eris. Through time and looking at resource companies, I'm sure you know that there are people who keep finding geologists, keep finding deposits. The smart geologists who have a track record of making discoveries are the ones to follow. Mm-hmm. And in Eris, we've got a team of proven multiple resource and deposit finders. And so through long years working in industry, we know the people at Osisko, we know the people at Centerra, and in both cases, we've presented the geological potential, the strategy for discovery, and they have supported and liked that. In fact, in several cases, they've come out to site, they've been through the geology, and they really like it, and that's why they're backing us.
Yeah, yeah. And so what do you know so far? I mean, you say you've done a drill program. What do you know so far about your resource there?
In Ireland, mm-hmm. at the Abbeytown project, the old mine was called Abbeytown, and the monks have been mining it, picking out lead and silver from it for hundreds of years, going back to medieval times. And it was mined in the Victorian era, and then there was a mechanized mine there in the 1950s, mining for lead. It's outside of the main trend of Irish zinc deposits, which run from more or less from Dublin southwest towards Limerick. We're up in the northwest, we're in exactly the same age rocks. But when the discoveries were coming through in the 70s and 80s, the focus shifted onto that main trend. And the Abbeytown area was completely neglected. There's been no exploration, no, the licenses haven't even been held since 1986. So when we went in there, we did a lot of we completely rethought the geology, because so much has changed in the last 30 years, understanding about the emplacement of zinc deposits in Ireland. And we pulled out all the old data, and we found that the drilling had only ever been incredibly shallow and had picked up what we believe now are the tops of lots and lots of systems. So Ireland, the Abitam project, we haven't done a lot of drilling. We've only put in four holes, but because of the old mine, we know that there's mineralization there. We can see an extension to the south that will move straight into, let's call it, resource delineation. And then we've got these other prospects, three other prospects out to the west, each of which are large targets in their own right, kind of soil anomalies which stretch over kilometers. So there's lots of smoke. There's lots of indications of high-grade mineralization in that district, but there hasn't been a lot of sensible drilling, let's call it, kind of to the right depths.
Yeah.
And we're talking shallow here. I mean, the drill holes we're doing are, we're hitting mineralization between 25 meters and 150 meters. And just to put this in context, on the Irish main trend, a lot of the work now is below 500 meters. And the last reserve to be delineated by Boleyn was down at 1.1 kilometers. So anything that we discover in the northwest in the top 300 meters, it's got a completely different commercial threshold or kind of economic criteria because it's shallow.
Yeah, I understand. And also in Sweden, what do you know about that resource there?
Sweden, it's a much broader approach, because we've got the backing from Centerra. We've got a strategic alliance over 66,000 square kilometers covering the main gold and polymetallic district of northern Sweden. It's a mining area. There's lots of mineralization there. The deal is that Centerra, they fund us $250,000 a year just to do basic exploration, targeting, geological mapping, sampling. We pick up ground, we take out licenses where we think it's prospective, and then we do some sampling of some of rocks and trenches and work these projects up. And so we've got 18 licenses in seven different project areas, each of them coming up as a potential discovery. Mm-hmm. Centerra has got the right within 2 years to elect one of these project areas or any of these project areas, and so far it's elected two. And on each one, it has to spend $1 million to earn 51%. And they're working on that. We're halfway through two of those. So we've got two gold projects where Centerra funding $1 million on each. And the next one, kind of along the conveyor belt, is something called Brandberg. It's another gold project, and that's we've picked that up quite recently, and it's got a lot of historic drilling in. So we've got and good grades: 28 meters at 2 grams a ton from surface, 33 meters at 1.8 grams gold from surface. You know, these are coherent mineralized intervals that we can target to build out resources on. So we've got these three gold projects plus another, the growing pipeline, the portfolio of gold projects. And so Centerra last year invested $1 million through us into the ground in Sweden. And this year it'll be 1.45 at least. And if they elect any more project areas, it'll go up by about $500,000 per project area per year.
Wow, yeah, it's impressive. And I'm just looking through the board there, and even though you're new to the podcast, there's somebody on the board there we've had on the podcast several times representing Horizonte Minerals. That's Jeremy Martin.
Yes, Jeremy Martin, the CEO of Horizonte. David Hall, he's a technical advisor, mm-hmm. And he has been is the chairman of Horizonte. So they've worked together for many years. Mm-hmm. They founded Ares Resources, and they've got a history with. They've got a David Hall in particular has got a long history with Centerra. He did a deal with them on Stratex. He and Medgold, these strategic alliance things. It's something. No, Centerra follow David Hall. They know that he finds or picks ground where there's mineralization and deposits. And Jeremy and David together worked in Sweden 10, 15 years ago, and they knew the geology, they knew of the potential, and 2 years ago, they presented a whole series of ideas to Centerra, and Centerra, that's how they entered into the strategic alliance.
Wow, it sounds very interesting. And if people are listening right now and like the sound of this, Merlin, but are not yet following you, which is, I suppose, a lot of people because you've just listed, give them three reasons why they should add you to their watch list.
Well, the first reason is we've got a really strong team of proven mind finders, and we picked up this ground in the downturn when we had the choice picking. So we've got highly prospective ground. Mm-hmm. The second reason is that we've come out with £4 million in capital, and our valuation is actually still below $10 million as a company. And through Eris, you get two companies for the price of one, because we've got the Irish Zinc, which we'll be drilling, and then you've got the additional upside through the Swedish portfolio funded by Centerra. So any discovery is going to have a dramatic impact on the valuation of this company. So, and because we're well-funded, that'll come straight back through to the share price. And then the third reason is that we have got multiple drill programs, so value catalyst coming through next year. 2018, an incredibly busy year. We're drilling right across our Irish portfolio. We're starting off with a 5,000-meter kind of reconnaissance program and resource delineation program south of the mine, and then growing that out. And we've got three separate drill programs planned in Sweden as well.
Excellent. Well, it sounds very good. And Merlin, the most impressive named person that I've ever had on the podcast, I think. And it's good to chat to you. And like I said, you have a lot going on there. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at five, Vela Technologies, V-E-L-A. That hookup or that investment in a blockchain company has done wonders for share price. So anything blockchain at the moment is going crazy. It's like the new dot-com bubble. Or boom, I should say. Don't mention the word bubble. Having said that, Bitcoin, have you seen it? It's gone from like over $18,000 down to about $13,000 today. So correction, crash, who knows? It's probably a crash, actually. At four, Westminster Group. That's WSG. At three, Hummingbird Resources. I talked to Bert earlier, of course. HUM. At two, Conroy Gold Natural Resources, CGNR. And number one, most followed company, is Lightwave. That's RLWRF. I had these on my watch a while back. And I had so many companies on my watch list. You know, the RNS pops up. I didn't really read about it, but I couldn't remember why I was interested in it. And someone brought them back up to my attention this week. And I had a read through, and it's an interesting company. So it's, I don't hold any stock, but worth watching, I think. LWRF there. Okay, top five most liked RNSs in the last 24 hours were, at five, Westminster Group, that ever-elusive, you know, Middle Eastern contract, which is getting closer and closer and closer and closer. It's been getting closer for the last 2 years. But it's information on that. It's a major Middle East project opportunity update. And they give an update. They say it's going very well down to the last few bits. Like I said, it's getting closer. And apparently there's more news in January. So the share price, because of that, I do hold stock still. And that, I doubled, sold half. But I do hold stock up about 70% at one point a day. But anyway, it's very interesting stuff. Because they're saying €24 million per annum revenue. When you consider the company's about, well, £18 million market capitalization, the value of the company, and that's a lot of revenue. Okay, at four, Hummingbird Resources, first gold poured at Yanfolila gold mine in Mali. I talked about it earlier, of course, and that was yesterday afternoon, that RNS. At three, STX Energy, commencement of operations at ELQ1 well in Morocco. At two, Vast Resources, interim results. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Motif Bio, MTFB, note statement from Amphibian Innovations. That's it for the podcast. Thanks very much for listening this year. I don't know if we'll have any before the new year now, but have a lovely Christmas. Have a happy new year. And hopefully we will be doing a weekend podcast that's still to come. Thanks very much. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.